Hello, everybody. It's Connor. Thank you so much for downloading this incredible new episode of Drama with Connor and Dylan McDowell. Before we get into it with the Max von Essen, I want to tell you about our Patreon. Patreon.com/thedramapodcast will bring you to our bonus content platform, Drama Plus. At Drama Plus, you get access to our Instagram close friends, and you get a couple bonus episodes of the podcast every single month where Dylan and I chit chat about all things theater, pop culture, love, life, and New York City. Oh, wait, I think that was our original tagline for the first like year of the podcast. Ah, the memes. Funny how it just came out of me. Anyway, thank you for finding us. You're going to love Max. You're going to love this episode. And because you love it so much, you're going to be inspired to go to patreon.com/thedramapodcast. Thank you again. We love you. Time for the show.
Press play. Curtain up and now we're in. It's time to take a spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey. Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Okay, there's a lot of things that have happened since we last recorded. The Grammys were 2 weekends ago, and Beyoncé finally won Album of the Year.
Finally. And I have to say, I loved Cowboy Carter so much. She was such a deserved moment. I thought the whole entire evening was fantastic. It was never really a dull moment, in my opinion.
That's so true. Until Will Smith started doing his little thing at one point, it was like truly so entertaining. I loved every second of it. The performances were great. Sabrina Carpenter is a star.
She is. She's kind of campy.
She could be in Chicago now that I'm saying this. She could
She could
definitely be. I feel
be.
like she's a Roxy, but she's so funny and fun. And she really stands out from the other pop girls by adding a little bit of like wink at the audience the whole time.
Completely agree. I was surprised that Espresso didn't win.
Kendrick took it, both song and record.
Yeah.
Kind of
I think the
gagged.
pop girls kind of split those categories because that's
They
the only
must have.
explanation. Because then Chappell Roan didn't get anything. Like, well, she got Best New Artist. But you know, it's funny. I normally literally do not care about the Grammys unless they actually award people that I like. It's a very unique, it's the only awards body that's like that. Because I do care so much about like Emmys, Tonys, obviously, you know,
I
Oscars, but.
know. Would you have given Beyoncé Album of the Year for any of her other albums before
I would have
this
probably
one?
given it to her for like four other albums, or like maybe this would have been her
Four.
fourth, in my
Yeah.
opinion. Yeah.
Oh, not four.
Not four. No. Not four the album, but probably for Beyonce. It's the self-titled.
Okay.
Lemonade, of course, her
Yeah. Oh, my
best.
God. For sure. Even Adele. Remember Adele was like, Beyonce, this is yours.
Yeah. And then Renaissance.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you. I feel like Lemonade, Renaissance, then Cowboy Carter, then self-titled. That's like my ranking. I mean, she should have won for all
Okay.
of them. So I agree with you.
Yeah.
Should have been four.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of my favorite parts about this year's Grammys was that we got to watch it together in the city with our friends Logan and Isaiah when I was in town to see a bunch of shows, including Chicago
Oh
on
my
Broadway.
God. Yes. And of course, our listeners already know our guest today is starring in it right now. So, but we got to dive into this conversation. I'm going to read a little intro to bring him in, and then we're going to do it. All right, y'all. Our guest today is a Tony Drama Desk and Outer Critics Circle Award nominee, currently starring as Billy Flynn in Chicago on Broadway. He's perhaps best known for his acclaimed turn as Henri in An American in Paris, as well as for recent Broadway turns in Anastasia as Gleb, as well as touring the nation as Marvin in Falsettos. His other incredible Broadway credits include revivals of Les Mis, Jesus Christ Superstar, and Evita, for which he regularly stepped in for Ricky Martin, as well as Dance of the Vampires, the closing company of Les Mis, and touring companies of Xanadu, West Side Story, and Chicago. A sample of his countless New York stage appearances include Yours Unfaithfully, The Dreyfus Affair, Death Takes a Holiday, Hello Again, Jerry Springer, The Opera, Finian's Rainbow, The Fantastics, and much more. He toured alongside Liza Minnelli, appeared in Sex and the City 2, and Submissions Only, The Good Wife, and so many more television shows, regional theater productions, and beyond, including a recent Carnegie Hall appearance. You can stream his solo album, Call Me Old Fashioned, The Broadway Standard, and see him at the Ambassador Theater 8 shows a week. Please welcome to Drama, Max
Max von
von Essen.
Essen. Woo! He sounds interesting.
He's so famous.
You know, it's crazy. It's like, this is going to sound so terrible and so ego filled, but like, it is nice sometimes to hear someone read what you've done, because you kind of go, yeah, that feels good. You know, because we get down on ourselves and we go like, oh, what's next? And this business is so hard. And, but you know, I'm older now and like, you've just read a lot of things. I was like, whoa, yeah. And it was just like a nice moment of like, yeah. And because not only are they good things, like they're things I'm really proud of. So that was great.
Aw.
Oh my goodness. Well, we are so happy to have you here, Max.
Thank you. I'm thrilled. You know what else you forgot?
Uh-oh.
And because you were just talking about the Grammys, and this is one of the coolest thing. I don't know if everyone knows this, but like these days, if the show you're in, if the album is nominated for a Grammy, if you are a principal vocalist on it, you are also nominated for a Grammy. And I didn't know that when I was doing An American in Paris. And all of a sudden, I literally got like this proclamation. They send you a medal. We didn't win because it was the Hamilton year, so we knew we weren't going to win. But I'm like an actual Grammy nominee. Isn't that crazy?
Wait, that's amazing. And whoever wrote your bio that I took most of this from is getting fired because that wasn't
No.
included. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Wait, that's
We got to start putting that
incredible.
everywhere. That's amazing.
It's such a fun thing. I mean, think about like just like this weekend, you know, Shoshana Bean is a Grammy winner for the Hell's Kitchen album because she's principal, you know, vocalist on it. And then that wasn't always the case, but I remember years ago being in my friend Andrew Rannells' house and he had this huge Grammy. I was like, what is that? He's like, we won. I was like, you are a damn Grammy winner. And was so gorgeous. Anyway, it's a cool new thing, I think, for theater people that wasn't always part of the process, and
Yes. So who would
it's
it go
fun.
to? Like the producers?
I guess the producers, and I would assume the composers, you know, the lyricist and the composer of the music. And I guess the producer, I don't know, I'd have to find that out. I won't bore everyone now. But yeah, but I don't know when it actually changed to also including up to five principal vocalists or something like that. It's interesting kind of like, you know, rules about it. But when it happened, I was like, oh my God,
That's a huge
Grammy
moment. Huge
nominee. Yeah,
moment. Oh my gosh.
so cool.
Gosh, you know, it's funny you mentioned that Hamilton won that year. Obviously, it didn't come to Broadway until that summer, and there was that rumor it could have moved and it didn't, and because it was American in Paris and Fun Home, and that was an
Oh,
exciting season.
right.
Very exciting. Luckily, well, not luckily, because, you know, we didn't win anyway, but they weren't in our Tony season. We had already been up for Best Musical, but it was delayed. Their album, then our albums aligned in
Yes.
Grammy season. And you're offered like an invite. They give you a ticket to the Grammys. You can fly out to LA, and all of us in American in Paris was like, we're not flying out to LA. Like, we're not taking personal days from our Broadway show to fly out to LA to like to lose the Grammy, you know. But it was a thrilling time. But you know, not that American in Paris wasn't beautiful, but we were like, I think Hamilton's gonna win the
I think they had
Grammy.
Hamilton like stream in a performance or something. Maybe that was a different awards
Probably.
show.
Yeah,
No,
I mean,
Dylan, you're right. They did. It was live from the Richard Rogers. They had the Hamilton cast perform. We were like, okay, so we know they're winning because they're performing. You know what I mean? And I don't think they normally even present that award on the main telecast.
They
So
probably
don't.
not, but as they should have. I mean, that was such an insane moment in time. Like some shows just become instant, iconic, you know, timeless sort of pieces, and Hamilton is one. It just had that global effect. It's
Oh,
amazing.
totally.
Absolutely. Anyway, enough about Hamilton. What do you want to
I know,
ask me?
more about Max, more about Max. Well, listen, we were listing off this incredible resume of accomplishments, credits, et cetera. And Dylan and I were talking about this beforehand. You first came into our lives, Max, and they were never the same since when you toured in Xanadu. And we saw you.
In Cleveland, we sat on stage at Playhouse Square in Cleveland, and we were like sophomores in high school, I want to say. And
Oh
you were
my. I remember I had
fantastic.
a biology project due the next day, and I was like shaking with nerves the whole night. But honestly, I was also shaking it like, you know, the short jean shorts and the comedy and all of it. Oh my God, it was incredible.
That show was so fun. And you know, I don't too often get a chance to do something that really is like kind of a leap for me, you know. Not that I don't consider myself a decent actor, but you know, it's hard to like someone give you the chance to like be really comedic or, you know, to wear those short shorts or something. But like, it was so fun to get to just be so silly, kind of sing your face off, you know, after, Cheyenne Jackson had left such an imprint on it. I'm trying to sing in those keys. I think I managed to convince them to put two songs down a half step, which was like allowed me to like almost get through it. But yeah, that was really fun. And then learning how to roller skate and all that was so silly.
So that wasn't part of the audition, or did you learn for the
You know,
audition?
we did have to roller skate. It was a roller skate call. But I borrowed some, and it was like it was just very basic. And they were willing to just kind of like it was one of those things where they like showed you enough that it was basically to see, because you know they don't expect to cast 12 people who know how to roller skate, but they need to at least see that like you could, you know. There's some people like, sorry, but like there's no chance, right? So you don't want to get in a situation like that where it's dangerous. They're just never going to pick up at all. That's like dance calls when I go to, because people know I can't dance, but they'll have me come in just to make sure I'm not going to like drop someone or be abs or look in ridiculous, because some people just cannot dance. And some people cannot roller skate. It's like that line in Funny Girl, and there's like, till they ask Barbara Streisand, like, can you roller skate? She's like, can I roller skate? And then you realize like she can't at all. That anyway, can I roller skate?
Oh, that's cute. That's so
where,
cute.
Where were you in your life when you were touring Xanadu? At what point in your career was that?
I feel like kind of like mid through, in a sense. I'd done about half the Broadway shows I've done, and I had just done the revival. In fact, it was I had just come out of like a very tough 2.5 year period, maybe, where I was like, I was up for so many great things, right? Like final callbacks for really big projects in the room with the creative team and other people that I was like, gosh, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm here. But I just like wasn't getting them. And I was really, really frustrated. Not that I was any party was going to leave the business, but like it was just really tough because, you know, you gotta like pay your bills and exist. And I was tired of like casting people telling me like, look, Max, you're down to the end, like what people would give to be in this process. That means you're in it, you're competing. But it was a real tough period. Then all of a sudden, like something that wasn't on my radar was replacing Aaron Lazar in Les Mis, the revival, as Angel Ross. And I was like, well, let me go in for it. And I went in and I booked it. It filled my soul, right? I forgot how much I loved Les Mis. I didn't know how much I was going to love the role of Enjolras. And it put me back on the boards. And I did it for like 9 months. And it just like got, I was like, okay, this is what I love to do, where I love to be. And then during that, I started auditioning for Xanadu, because I didn't book it when it was on Broadway, but they all loved me. And I remember even Douglas Carter Bean, the playwright of it, you know, sending me a card to the theater at Les Mis, which is so rare. I could count on like less than 5 fingers how many times someone has written a note saying, we loved you, you be one day I'm gonna work with you, I know it. And then sure enough, you know, they cast me in the national tour, and again it was just perfect. And then from that point on, it really like things just kind of like shifted. I felt like I was really making, you know, having a career in this business, and like really, you know, paying my bills, being happy, going from several shows to several shows. And it was a real nice period in time, and Xanadu was one of those things I remember, like at that crossroads from Les Mis to Xanadu, that really like picked me back up. And I was like, yeah, you're doing it.
Oh, that's so special. From what I've heard, yeah. And we got the chance to talk to Aaron about that production of Les Mis, it was good vibes in the building. Everyone just really was there and enjoying it.
Yeah, great vibes. That really makes a difference in this business. And I'm sure we'll talk about Chicago in a minute, but just very quickly, like that's one of the things you would think like, whoa, Chicago, 28 years, you know, how's everybody doing over there? You know what I mean? Are we happy? Are we okay? And let me tell you something, it is a wonderful, wonderful building. And I wouldn't just say that because I won't talk about the shows where it wasn't a great building, right? Like I'll talk about the shows where it was great. And that Les Mis revival, it was like that. You couldn't wait to get to work. We had an absolute blast being backstage, the silliness. It was an incredible place to work. And don't get me wrong, like I like to tell the like, kids if I'm talking to or doing a masterclass, it's like I don't want to make the industry to sound out like it's just perfect and it's roses. It's like, no, it's hard. And going to Chicago every night, there's some nights I'm like, whoa, this is going to be a tough one. But when the vibe is right and the way people are clicking and the feeling backstage and how you're treated, when that's strong, that just changes everything. When you're excited to be with the people and be in the building, it makes a huge difference. And yeah, that Les Mis revival was one of those really fun ones.
I'm so happy to hear that. And honestly, I can feel you're in a good place right now. We do like to check in with our guests. You know, you have a show tonight, right? Yeah, it's Monday nights at the Ambassador. Yeah. Are you well, Max?
No.
Listeners, you cannot see, but Max took a lovely sip of tea after answering the question.
No, I am. Here's the thing. I feel like, and this is an important theme, and I learned this from my dear friend Gavin Creel, who we sadly lost, but we're also blessed to have known him and to seen him perform, and so many things he's said and done stick with me. And one thing is that it can be both, right? And life right now is, I'm really lucky. I'm very, very privileged, and I'm so grateful. I am an doing a job that I love so much, and I almost hesitate to say starting with the job, but like, you have to understand, I get to do what I love to do. And it's still a job and it's still work, but the overwhelming like percentage of how I feel about it is a positive honor. Like, I can't believe I get to do what was originally my passion and continues to be my passion. Still work, still frustrating times, but I am so lucky to get to do that. Work with great people, I've got great friends, but also there are things going on in the world right now and in America that get me down, and I like to stay active and involved in what's happening and to speak up about things that I disagree with and I'm scared about, and that's got me down. So it's like two things at once. But yeah, I'm well, but I'm also struggling with things and passionate about things, and I want things to be better, and I'll continue to speak up about things that frustrate me and make me sad. But it can be both. And one of the things that's like so important is to, while we're struggling or while you're frustrated with this administration or things, it's so important to also find your own joy and celebrate your joy. That's a protest and a celebration in itself. So I'm good, but I also remain like very engaged and want things to be better. So it's both, and that's okay.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that. I 100% do as well. Dylan, I said it 100%. Dylan recently told me that I have a catchphrase, which is 100%. And I'm like, okay, cool. Anyway, and I've noticed that about your socials, Max. You are super engaged in current events, political events, et cetera. And I so appreciate that you use your platform to speak out about the things that you're passionate about. It's what Gavin would want you to do. I mean, I don't think he'd be big on social media doing it. You know, that wasn't really his thing. But...
No, but we knew how passionate he was. And he's one of the people that got me even more active and more vocal about things. I remember years ago when he called, he's like, we're going to Washington, we're putting it together, and we're marching for marriage equality. He's like, can you donate a bus? And I was like, well, let me see. Looking at my checkbook, you know, like we're all, and he got all of us to donate a lot of money so we could rent. And then the more we raised, we just kept like renting more and more buses, and we'd fill them up with performers and students. And we all marched in Washington for marriage equality. I remember being there with Gavin and Audra McDonald and just tons of us, and Nick Adams, and like, I wouldn't have done that if Gavin hadn't got me involved in that. So I'm grateful. You know, that's the impact, like, mm-hmm. that, you know, I rather than crying right now, and I could so instantly, I'd rather choose to remember like what he's left all of us with. And I wouldn't be as vocal and I wouldn't be as active as I am if not for people like Gavin that I've had in my life. And I always try to come at it because I don't like to be combative. And I do this with like family members I disagree with and people I might meet, like I, or someone, if someone comes after me and says something really flippant on social media or something, very often I will direct message them. And I'll be like, hey, I got your message about that. I would love to talk to you and something. And then people are like, they're kind of disarmed. And, right. And then they like engage and you realize they're like, they're not actually such jerks. Like, but social media brings out this like, I'm just going to say this. And so I try to remind, and don't get me wrong, of course, I've said some things on social media I regret, or I think too quickly, respond too quickly. But I try to really like speak to people, or I'll say, hey, I would love to talk more about this if you'd like to. And you realize people are actually calmer and more willing to discuss things. But it's just gotten so divisive and cruel that even though how I feel, I want to like react like really well and be like, how could you possibly think this way? I try to really like take a moment and just, and it can be hard sometimes because I think some of us and people in the queer community and like people who are really passionate about women's rights and the environment and for trans rights, like at a certain point you're like, enough of us being kind. But I do feel like I've been very lucky in this life and I've been very privileged that I can, you know, try my best to meet people where they're at and be kind and take my time. And you wind up, you know, opening up more minds that way, even though you'd love to curse people out, but it's not as effective.
I need to hear that because I do feel like there are so many reasons to be angry right now. But remembering we're all human beings and the best way to speak to each other is by getting on the same level, I think,
yeah,
is really key.
But absolutely stay angry because we have a right to be angry, but then let that filter in staying engaged to whatever point you're able to, because we also have to truly protect our mental health, but stay engaged to a certain respect. Do what you can, donate if you're that privileged, make calls if you're able to, whatever you can do in your own world, just like just give some time to it. And don't overwhelm yourself. Don't stay on, you know, cable news. Don't stay on social media all day. But I do this thing where I check in like for 10 minutes a day on news. And that's enough. You trust me, you get it. You see, yeah. Very quickly, you know, but I find it important to remain vocal and to share things, because it's amazing. You think you're preaching to the choir in your own socials, but it is amazing how many people be like, oh my God, what? I didn't know that. Or family members who, I had a family member recently who came at me like, how could you, you know, say this? And I like engaged with that person, sent them like, you know, facts, you know, very calmly, thought through and shared what actually is happening to the LGBTQ community. And, you know, I've not heard back from that person, like, because I think they were like, oh, whoa. But I didn't scream, you know, I didn't get angry. I really just came with, I came informed. In fact, I did way more work than they deserved. But I wanted to educate. And it's always coming from my heart and as a human. Anyway.
That's really beautiful. I need to take that energy.
May that be an example to us all.
I know. Well, Max, something else we ask all of our guests is when they got into the business. Flipping back over to the theater here, we like to ask about the Ring of Keys moment, that moment of recognition when you were maybe watching something or taking in art in some way, and you realized you needed to be a part of it. Do you feel like you had a moment at some point in your life like that?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like I had like a string of moments. It's like a ring of like a keychain or
yeah.
something. It's a keychain of events.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I will never forget. And it wasn't like, oh, I saw a show and I was like, oh, I want to be an actor. It was before that. I was in elementary school, maybe second or third grade, and a music teacher was in an assembly or something. We were all gathered into like this hall, and she started playing piano. Some sort of song as part of the assembly or whatever. And I had never seen, you know, at that age, I'd never seen someone play piano like in front of me. It was the first time I'd seen in real time, like someone's hands. And I think about this all the time. And I tell this story a lot. Like, it was like a magician was in front of me. I could not believe, you know, I think some people see dance for the first time or someone singing, but like I was mesmerized to the point where like I went home that day, asked my parents for a piano and lessons. They were like, because it was really like out of nowhere. And they're like, well, you know, because I was youngest of four and they were all into sports and stuff. My parents didn't grow up with much, you know, introduction to the arts or opportunities in the arts, but they were really amazing parents. So they were wanting to just, you know, fulfill my, you know, what interests in any way they could. And they saw that I was really interested. So they were like, okay, well, okay, let's try to make this happen. They bought this cheap piano. They got me some lessons. They were like, if you start playing and you take this seriously, we will, you know, get you a better piano and show us that you love this and you're committed. And sure enough, within like 2 years, they were like, well, wow, he loves this. And they got me a much better piano and I just never stopped playing. And then by the time I was in middle school, I was good enough to play for like the chorus, like the choirs in school and for like recitals and things. And I remember playing and I also sang on my own too, but not very much, like not publicly and not in front of people. And I would play piano and I was like watching the choirs. And I was like, gosh, and I had this urge to like kind of like switch places, like be up there and apply my singing a bit more. So that led me to, you know, singing in the choirs and auditioning for school musicals. And then that, you know, pairing the music with acting in musical theater led me to, you know, more of a passion for acting. And like, then that was it, you know, but it was those like seminal moments that just like planted the seed that just like never stopped growing. And then forget it, you know, by then when I was in like middle school and saw some of my first Broadway shows, it all just like fell into place that I wanted to do this. I didn't know if I was going to do it like for real. It was still overwhelming to me. I didn't know if people, it wasn't like realistic in my upbringing that you made careers in this. It just seemed like it was something there, you know, it was something on Broadway very much, you know, you didn't, it just was like at a distance, you know, and the Tony Awards, you know, and when I grew up, this is a long time ago, this is before social media and everyone had cell phones, like you didn't have a connection to actors. You didn't, you know, couldn't even like send them a DM and you could just like, you didn't like sign up for a master class. There are so many ways for people to connect with Broadway performers now that it was not like when I was younger. So it just seemed like, oh, I don't know if that's like for real. But by the time I was like graduating college, I was like, I have to try this. Like, I will regret my whole life, regret it my whole life if I don't at least try it. And so that was it. But yeah, it was those like early moments, and from like, honestly, teachers in school who, you know, I saw doing this, and then they in turn saw my love for it, and it just took off. Like, I just couldn't get enough. And it was like music and the arts were just like, it literally saved me. It gave me my chosen family, my friends, a place where I felt normal and accepted. And it was just a world in the arts that I just never wanted to leave.
Oh, well, thank goodness for those teachers, that assembly, whatever it was. Your character, I unfortunately didn't get to see you in An American in Paris, but we saw the national tour again in Cleveland. And isn't your character, doesn't he play piano in the show? Or was that a different character?
No, that was Adam, right? That Brandon Uranowitz.
Okay.
Gotcha.
That character who was sort of like the Gershwin character and played a lot of stuff, which is funny because I play piano and not well anymore. But when I was a kid, I used to play all the Gershwin preludes that ultimately were in An American in Paris. And Gershwin was my favorite. The Gershwin brothers, George and I, were Gershwin, my favorite songwriting team. Like as a kid, like it was the Gershwins. Like what kind of a kid was
Oh,
I?
Oh my God, how cute.
And I would like devour this big Gershwin book that my mom bought me. And I knew all these songs and I'd play them. And so when American in Paris was just getting going and readings and things, they asked me to audition for that character who was this like Brooklyn Jewish, played piano. And really the only thing that really vibed with me was the piano part. And they were trying to get me. It just wasn't a correct fit. And I remember after that audition, Christopher Wheeldon, the director choreographer, was like, Max, he's British. Max, how's your tap? And I was like, I don't dance. I've never even touched a tap shoe. And they're like, ah, okay. And I was just so frustrated because the character of Henri was like, is me. Like literally, like it is who I am. It is my DNA. You just set me in Paris in the early 1900s, living through World War II. And I'm like, truly, it's the only character I've ever played where I was like, it is actually just me, my DNA. You just set me in another time and place, right? And so all I had to do was learn about, you know, Paris and World War II and what it'd be like growing up. But I just had to put my own being in it. And it was like heaven. But it took me a long time to convince them to give me the role because I couldn't, Ooh. You know, and I went through these dance calls and like, I went through a dance call that I did all these combinations with some of the best dancers in New York. It was humiliating. And then they're like, then went before they, everyone broke and we're going to do the tap. They cut me before the tap. No. They literally said, Max, we think we've put you through enough. And I was like, well, not booking this one.
Did you really think that? You were kind of like devastated. You were like, well, that's
well,
it.
Well, not so much devastated because I just thought this can't be for me. And then two weeks later, I got a final call back and I was like, what? To come back and do the scenes and the songs. And I was like, okay. Just go for it. And I went for it and I got it. And then, you know, I ultimately did it. And, you know, I didn't tap. I just kind of faked a few steps while everyone danced around me. And, you know, they let me move the way I move, which is I could, you know, fake some things and fit into songs like Swonderful and, you know, Stairway to Paradise. But I didn't dance, certainly. But they realized that I was able to bring so much more to the acting and the singing and who the spirit of who this person is. Like, I rarely say this when I talk about a character I've played, but for Henri, like, I truly, truly feel like it was my role. And I was meant to play this role. And it's one of my proudest sort of accomplishments. And I can truly say that because it just, that they meant so much to me, this character. So, like, when I think about how it worked out, I'm like, thank goodness. It was sort of like my career before American in Paris and my career after. And not that anything was up or down. It's just that that was like a marker in my career of like, wow, that was just truly, truly so special that I think of things before and after in American in Paris because it was that special for me.
And the Tony nomination probably didn't hurt either.
Oh, no.
And the Grammy. And the Grammy
oh,
nomination.
That's right.
Can't forget. Do you feel like, you know, you say it was like a marker. Do you feel like in terms of your career, there was a shift? We know we joke about like, oh, the Tony nomination didn't hurt, but the Tony Drama Desk, Outer Critics Circle, the Grammy nomination. Do you feel like more opportunities were open to you after that?
Yes. These things don't like, I think a lot of people probably tell you whether they're nominated or have wins that it doesn't change it the way like you sort of dream it would, like, oh, the offers are just going to come in. There was a shift in just like a little bit of attention, some doors opened, a sense of, I hate to say the word respect, but like there's something that comes with, there's a really nice feeling in being in a show or they introduce you as Tony nominee, like, and even win, but it doesn't matter. Like, it was still so special, or like it's in a, a press release for something else you're doing, or it certainly opened up doors. Like, I had just, oh no, right after, when I was doing Anastasia, I finally was like, Max, you've got to do a concert. You've got to do a concert. People keep, from venues keep asking you. And finally, this venue in Florida, like three different places offered me these dates, and it was good money. And I was like, and it was like 6 months down the road. And I was like, just take them, just take the dates. Then you have to do it. And something like that was really helpful, because Tony nominee, An American in Paris, and that helped for booking concerts and things. So it's without a doubt, it was a turning point and a really lovely boost to sort of my career and what, sort of it means where I am in the theater. And it didn't, it wasn't a game changer. It wasn't, and it's not like, oh, I'm constantly just fielding offers, but it was a nice shift and a lovely boost. And the best thing about it was just sort of the thrill of that season. Like at that point, I wasn't 24, fresh out of college. Like I had worked for years, and that was like my, I don't know, fifth Broadway show or something. So I wasn't in this for Tony. Like that had passed. Like I was in this to be a working actor in New York, because that's what I love to do, and I was building that kind of career. And when I first like booked the readings, like the workshop of that, it wasn't like, oh, this role could be a Tony nomination. Like not even for a second in my mind. And then people started kind of like whispering about it, and I was like, oh gosh, okay. And then it was a little annoying, because then I was really hoping for the nomination. But that was very last minute. That was very close to when we were actually doing it on Broadway, so I didn't have to like stress about it for, a year or anything. But it was just the joy of like being part of that season and doing something I didn't even like, I dreamed of course, but then you're part of it. And then you're going to luncheons and things, and like you look across the room and you see Bernadette Peters and Joel Grey and Tommy Toon at a table, and you see Tommy Toon waving, and then I'm looking like, who's he waving to? And then you realize he's waving to you. You're like, oh, hey, Tommy. Like these people now who you idolized are it all in, part of this Tony voter kind of world, and they're legends, and they see your show because they're probably voting or whatever, and they know you because now you've met at all the brunches and things and events, and you're like, wow, like these people know who I am, and they saw me in my show and they liked it and they're waving hello. It's like, how? Like you just, because I will always be that little closeted kid from Long Island that just dreamed, like, how could I possibly, be part of that world and that community? And then you're working and you do it, and then you sit like at that luncheon, and someone like Tommy Toon waves to you, and you're literally like, who is he waving to? And you're like, oh my God, he's waving to me. He saw my work and he likes my work. Like it's just one of those things, like it's never lost on me that I get to be part of this world, that I would have given anything to be told that you're going to be okay, you're going to be part of this theater community, you're going to be surrounded by people who champion you and accept you, and you get to, be creative with. Like I would have given anything to be told something that would have been like, ha, no, no way, no way. And then you are, and it's amazing.
Oh, how beautiful. You've got me tearing up over here, Max. It reminds me of like, do you watch Drag Race when they make it to the end and they're like, what would you say to 3-year-old Max? And they're like
That's
sobbing.
what, and the and
When
that's what I
did,
would say.
that's the
Yeah.
moment. Yeah. When did you come out?
I came out in my freshman year of college, to some friends there, and then to most of my family, like at the end of once I had figured out in school that like I felt safe and I knew without a doubt, like before that it was like, am
Yeah.
I, I knew I was, of course, instinctively, like I knew deep down I was, but it was still very scary. And I grew up at a time like I missed the AIDS crisis, right? But I was a kid during that, so all I sort of saw in the media or around me in New York was that. Was AIDS, covers of magazines, people who I thought like were the coolest things in the world, now they're dead. Rock Hudson, Liberace, who I was obsessed with as a piano player,
Oh, yeah.
and like these things, I didn't know why, but I was like, I would be like a little kid in tears, and I didn't understand why. And I thought, coming out was a death sentence. Like, truly, I was really, and guys my age, we talk about this. It really stays with you, right? And so there was a real fear. And I'm old enough that, like, we didn't have, gay straight alliance and LGBTQ clubs in school. Like, it was not happening. The other people that I suspected were also gay were also, like, very scared and closeted. So I was like, I at that point, I still would have, if you had said, like, you can make a wish and you won't be gay, like, I would have taken that wish. And now you couldn't pry it from my gay hands. You know what I mean? It is like, I wouldn't give it away for the world because it's who I am. And it's like the most incredible community that I could be a part of. But so I felt like getting away and going to school and being with a much larger sort of world and more diverse, that I would have a chance to kind of figure things out. And of course, I knew, right away once I was felt safe with a group of people or could, date other guys, I was like, 100%.
I like that
I
catchphrase.
say it a lot too. I
Interesting.
actually do say it a lot.
Do you?
Yeah.
Now you're a gay leading man, not a gay character, but on Broadway in Chicago, one of the most iconic shows, longest running show on Broadway currently.
Yes, crazy.
You get some of the best numbers in the show too.
Oh, great numbers. And and yet, like someone's saying, do you do some of them in your concert? I was like, no, because I need the girls with the feathers, or I need Roxy, on my lap so we can sing both Reach for the Gun, or even Razzle Dazzle, is the entire, they're not really songs that work well on their own as a solo, but I like to, in my solo show, like do like pair songs together. Like I do a big medley of songs from An American in Paris, or like, I think it'd be cool to sort of maybe do a little bit of a Chicago medley where I sing role, songs that other characters sing. But yeah, no, it's so great. And I always loved Candor and Ebb, and I always loved the kind of like show style that's like a show within a show, which they're so good at, like cabaret, And then I find it, and that's why I love An American in Paris too, because Henri actually sings like in a
That's
cabaret.
right. Yeah.
And then has this like fantasy sequence where it like turns and like he imagines himself like at Radio City Music Hall. So like you're actually in a show in the show, so you're allowed to perform. You know what I mean? You're no longer just a person in a scene that you have to be as grounded as real as possible. No, you're actually someone who is a performer in a club, and you get to do that too. So that's so fun for me. And Chicago's isn't quite that little show within a show, but it's told in that vaudeville style. So some scenes are super locked in and grounded, and some are absolutely meant to be like shoulder to shoulder, face out, landing a joke, and then some, like the press conference rag or whatever it's called, the both reach for the gun number. Like it is a press conference and we are selling it, and we're doing it right to the audience. Velma takes the stand and all these numbers. Like it's such a fun way of telling this story. So, and I've always been, like I said, Candor and Ebb and cabaret styles like that. Like I've always been drawn to that. So it's extra fun. I mean, and these songs just like, the songs, the subject matter, like people are still obsessed with like crime and celebrity, and it's wild how 28 years in the show is just like still works like
For
gangbusters. It's
real, for
crazy.
real. And the movie came out in there somewhere too, and it's like every time another number starts, I would get excited because what's coming, but you're like, oh, another hit, another amazing character moment.
Yeah.
It's in your voice, Max, sound you soar in this show. I mean, you are in fine voice.
Oh, thanks. It really fits well, so it's nice. Like it's a hard enough role that I don't get to just like puff puff through it. I've got to stay in shape, and I've got to stay super focused. One of the hardest things actually is the dialogue and the speeches. I didn't realize it because I've seen the show many times. I didn't realize it until I started working, and I was like, "Whoa, these are very fast-paced. He's really driving things, and it's very challenging for my mind, actually." And I go over a lot of the speeches in my dressing room each night before the show. It's keeping my mind sharp. It's keeping my voice in shape, and yet it's manageable enough that I'm finding it like I don't miss the show. You know what I mean? I don't miss performances. I very rarely miss, a performance. Like I'm able to do it. Almost, really, it just fits really well, and it's more ma challenging, but also manageable. And I'm just having a blast. Like, I mean, my contract, that first contract I signed was, I think, was like 8 weeks, and I've been there like 15 months or
Oh my
something.
God.
I just keep extending. They do very short contracts for the leads. They can kind of keep it people in and out and
Right.
flow. Who works well with this person? Who works well here? What celebrity might want to come in for a stint? So it's very fluid for the leads, which is great great, but also tricky because sometimes you're like, well, just can I just stay?
Right.
You know, but I've been extended many, many times, and now it's well over a year, and it's just been, wow, here's a gig that I just thought, oh, I'm so glad I get to do this role. And now cut to, it's been like a solid, solid gig for me. And I love it because I like that stability. I love being in this business, not for the, you know, I'm not in it to audition. You know what I mean? Like, that's not my favorite part of this. I like to work. I like to, we work so hard to book a show, book a role. And again, maybe a Tony nominee, but I auditioned for this and I had to, audition and then a callback and singing for Barry Weiser and I had to get approved and book it, like, an audition. And so I was proud to get it. And so I was like, gosh, I did all this work for, an 8-week contract. So it's been really great. I'm having an amazing time there and in no rush to leave.
Good.
I'm so happy. Yeah, because I saw you probably a year ago, right around this time when Ariana Maddox was in. Because we are huge Bravo people here. I mean, love, love, love. So obviously we had to come back and see Ms. Erica Jayne. And
also so great. Mm-hmm. Are they both so amazing?
Oh my God, so good. Well, Dylan saw Erica with me and Erica has this star quality that you just can't like describe. She smiles this $1 million smile and she's just got it. It's such perfect casting. And for everything that's gone on in her personal life, I don't know if you're a Real Housewives person, Max, but just knowing how she was in the papers and her going through the court stuff, it really plays wildly when you're watching her on stage.
It plays so well. Yeah. And, I don't wish, challenges in people's lives or these sort of, quote unquote scandals that they've been through. But, having been through some tough things and been through them in the public eye.
And vindicated.
Yes. And vindicated. it really does kind of lend itself to this. And people already feel like they know you a bit. And then they're watching you going through what Roxy's going through. And it just works so beautifully. And I don't think in an exploitative way. I just think it's a perfect way to kind of like pair your personal life and your celebrity with a great musical. It's really incredible. And the best thing about the two people we were just talking about, Ariana and Erica, they are amazing people. They are just as cool. And that's what's always the even more important to me sometimes. What is the hang like? Mm-hmm. are they a good hang? And they are backstage just as kind, just as gracious, just as fun as they are on stage. And that to me is like, it's more than half, 50% of it's important. Because you want that whole experience. What are they like in rehearsal? What are they like before the show? What are they like between scenes? Both of them, absolutely fantastic.
Oh, I love it. A good hang.
Even the more Broadway names that have been in it over the last year, I mean, in addition to you, Orfei, Robin Herder, Max Clayton, so many amazing people. Like, there's always a reason to go back to The Ambassador.
I know. They really are doing such a good job keeping it going. Like, we were talking about Gavin Creel before, but he came to see it just literally a few months before he passed away. And, like, he saw me and Robin and Natasha Yvette Williams. And it was just, like, he's so supportive. And he was just like, oh my God. And he's like, are you kidding me? The show is in such insane shape right now. He's like, this is like musical theater heaven. I was like, yeah, it's like, it's really a special show. And they still care about it. And they still try to put terrific people in the roles. And they find great performers, but also great people, which is important too. So it's really a special place. Unique. I mean, come on, 28 years. Crazy.
Oh, I know. My God. Well, I'm glad to hear you're going to be sticking around for a while so everyone has a chance to see
it. Yeah.
Max, I feel like we started this off by listing off your resume. You have done so many incredible things. We're running short on time here, but I want to give you a chance. Are there any credits that you're most proud of? Things that we haven't mentioned yet that come to mind that you don't mind telling a little story about?
Definitely. This past fall, just like 2 months ago in late November, I had my own evening at Carnegie Hall with the New York Pops, which was just like, it's hard to even explain what it's like to do your own night at Carnegie Hall. Like, it's something I remember telling to the audience, I was like, you have to understand, like, I didn't even dream of this night. I was like, this is because this was so beyond what my dreams as a kid could have ever been. But I've been like kind of like developing this relationship with the New York Pops for several years now. And as I developed the relationship and performed in some of their galas and did some concerts that I shared with other people, I didn't even think that like, oh, it would culminate in my own evening. Because I just thought that's for, not to, put myself down, but I just thought that's for bigger people, like, let's be honest, Carnegie Hall, it's an 80-piece orchestra. And then to get offered because each season they have an incredible program, but they generally, I think, just pick one person each season that it's an evening with. You know, it's like where it's like an evening with so and so. You get to know this person, you get to hear about their career, you get to hear some songs that they're connected with, you get to hear other songs. And then the other evenings are, you know, celebration of this composer or this and that. It's such an honor. And I just couldn't believe that I got to do it. Like, it will remain, I mean, for me, it's the greatest musical achievement I've ever had in my career. And it will remain one of the greatest nights of my life. There's just nothing like that door opening and you walking on the stage of Carnegie Hall, singing with the ADP Orchestra and connecting with the audience for 2 hours, over 2 hours. Like, it was just absolutely surreal and just an unbelievable highlight. And then the other things are, you know, what we've talked about, you know, the Broadway shows, like the American in Paris and that Tony season, right now Chicago and Iconic, like every Broadway show has been a thrill and an honor, but that night at Carnegie Hall, I will never ever forget it. It will be remain one of the greatest nights and honors of my life, without a doubt.
Oh, love it. I can see in your face like how you're like reliving it in your head right now. Just that feeling.
I do. I really do. When I talk about it, and you know, as you can already tell, I get very easily emotional because I just appreciate things that have come into my life and they mean a lot to me. And I always connect, everything connects to being that kid that wanted it so badly, or that kid that wanted to be like safe and accepted and just be able to get through life because it was just so scary when I was younger and I honestly didn't know if I was going to make it. So I connect so much of it to that. And that kid would have just lost his mind knowing that he's gotten to do what I've gotten to do. So it's emotional for me and it's never lost on me, but what an honor it is I get to do what I do.
You give me goosebumps. I mean, that was your Judy Garland moment there at Carnegie Hall there too.
Oh, fully. I did a whole Judy Garland section. You're kidding? I was like, I can't be here without doing a little Judy Garland. I did The Man That Got Away. We did this big trolley song arrangement. The New York Pops did the Judy Garland at Carnegie Hall overture. The full, bah, 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 like, you know, the whole thing, like the audience was losing their mind. And then I came out and started, it was heaven. Oh. I was like, look, no one has a right to sing these Judy Garland songs. But I was like, but if I'm going to be at Carnegie Hall, you know, with an 80-piece orchestra, screw it. I'm singing them now. I'm not changing in the pronouns and I'm just owning it. And it was, and I think for the audience too, because, you know, that music just feels so thrilling and feels so known and comfortable to them that I think it was a highlight for everyone else as well. It was really awesome.
Oh, I'll bet.
You know, what a dream, right? What a dream.
Giving the gays everything they want, Max. Oh my God. Well, we could talk to you forever, but we're sadly wrapping up. We always like to end with a little dose of drama. This is a pop culture rec. It's that thing on your mind that you want to share and leave the listeners with. And there is something on my mind that as soon as we're done recording, I'm going to dive back into. I finally started Severance last night and I am addicted. I was kind of told like, oh, it's slow burn. Oh, it's this, whatever. I'm 4 episodes into season one and I am hooked. And I've heard it only gets better from here. So if y'all want to find me in the next couple of days, you know where I'll be. On my couch watching Severance.
Baby, that's mine. You know, I started 2 nights ago and I'm 4 episodes in on season one. And I'm like, oh my God.
You're kidding. Oh my God. That's so good.
I've obviously known this has been in like the zeitgeist for a couple of years now, right. But I never watch it. But literally when I'd see the ads and things and I knew it existed, I was like, oh, what is that? Like The Office?
Yeah. Right. I know.
I thought it was this absolute comedy. I had no clue what the show was actually about, but I am in it.
It is so well done, right? Like the direction is fantastic. How we're getting these overhead shots of them walking around the building. It's just,
it's so cool.
They give you just enough each episode to learn a little bit more and you're second guessing where this is going. And the fact that, I mean, I'm sure we'll see it more, but the fact that Adam Scott is essentially playing two versions of the same character in every single episode is wild. It's so good. And Patricia Arquette.
Oh my God.
The cast is fantastic. Patty's in it. Oh, I'm sold. I'm sold with Patty Arquette. Oh my God.
Done.
And Ben Stiller directed a lot of the episodes too, I guess.
Oh, but yeah.
I'm hooked. And that's so funny. Yeah, I'm on episode 4. I'm like halfway in. I need to.
Fully. We're like in sync on that. And we're neighbors. I can't tell everyone where we live, but we're neighbors. We just found out. So crazy.
Hilarious. Oh my
You can hear
God.
it playing from the other side of the wall, I guess. Well, listen, I need to start Severance, but I also have to recommend a movie. If it's playing in a theater near you, I really loved the movie I'm Still Here. It's a Oscar-nominated movie. Fernanda Torres was nominated for Best Lead Actress. It's beautiful. It's shockingly relevant. It's a heavy watch, but I really recommend it for anybody who's able to view it. Max, this has been such a delight. Thank you for spending this time with us. Seriously, we've loved you since, I don't know, Xanadu, whatever year that was. And to see you on Broadway last week was a true treat. And this was just the cherry on top.
Thank you guys. You guys are awesome. I really appreciate the time.
Oh, thank
Oh my
you.
gosh. Yeah. And where can everyone find you on social media?
Oh God, I'm still all over it, and I never thought we were all going to be on social media for so long. I am at Maxie's Pad, which people still make fun of me for. MaxizPad at Maxie's Pad. So find me, and then, don't follow me.
Maxie's Pad with a Z. I love it. While everyone's following Max, they've got to follow us. We're at the Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I'm at Dylan McDowell. Leave us a rating, follow us, check out iHeartRadio, all that good stuff. And Connor, I will see you next time. Drama.
Drama.